Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
True Appalachian horror stories. From horrifying paranormal encounters to the most bizarre experiences you will ever hear. Just trust me, these stories are some of the scariest I have ever heard. Let's get right into it. I want you to get cozy. Grab a blanket and some snacks. Our first story. I wish we would have known what people say about Appalachia. I really do, because what happened to us in that cabin is one of the most disturbing things I've ever experienced. My name is Bryce, and my wife, Lauren, and I rented a small Airbnb cabin tucked deep into the mountains of eastern Kentucky. We'd never been to Appalachia before. We didn't know the rules. We didn't know what could happen in those woods. Online, it just looked peaceful and remote. Exactly what we were looking for. That first day was perfect. The house sat at the end of a long, winding driveway, surrounded by trees for as far as the eye could see. Beyond the tree line, the mountains rolled out, fading into the distance. Lauren stepped out of the car, took one look around, and smiled. "Okay, this is insane," she said. "We are never leaving." We spent the afternoon on the back deck. The air smelled so good. We were used to the city, so this was great. There was a wind chime hanging from the corner of the roof that rang softly every few minutes, then went completely still. It was picturesque. There were no horns or hum from distant traffic. No city noise, just quiet, the two of us. At one point, Lauren said, "Can you imagine living here? I could see us getting a place like this someday." I remember nodding. During the day, it felt like the safest place in the whole world. That night, it didn't. By the time the sun went down, the entire place felt different. The woods weren't just dark or shadowy. It was pitch black. Like the kind of darkness where you can't even see your hand in front of your face. Out there, there are no street lights or distant glow. The only light was from the back deck on the cabin that barely spilled into the yard. Just a few steps beyond it was complete darkness. We went to bed around 11. No TV, barely any signal, just the two of us in a house that suddenly felt much bigger than it had earlier. But we easily drifted off to sleep until sometime around 2 a.m. We both woke up at the exact same time because there was a knock at the front door. Lauren whispered, "Do you hear that?" Before I could even answer, another knock. This one harder. We both sat there, frozen in the dark. We hadn't seen a single person all day. There were no neighbors for miles. Who would be at the front door? Then it stopped. And for a moment, everything went completely silent again. Until we heard it. Whistling. Soft at first, far away. Then moving. Slowly circling the cabin. It didn't sound like someone casually whistling. It sounded strange. It moved along the side of the house, around the back, until it stopped right outside our bedroom window. And that's when something hit me I still can't explain. The lights were off, the house was completely dark. There was no way anyone outside should have known exactly where we were. The whistling just stayed there, right outside the glass, close enough that I could almost picture someone standing there. Then it stopped. Just like that, gone. We didn't get much sleep the rest of the night. The next morning, the sun came up and we almost felt ridiculous for being so scared. Sunlight poured through the windows. The woods looked normal again. Birds were everywhere, chirping. We made coffee, sat on the porch, and tried to laugh it off. Probably just some local teenagers messing with us, I said. Laura nodded, but I could tell she wasn't fully convinced. Neither was I. Still, by midday, it felt far away. We drove into a small town about 25 minutes out, had lunch, walked a trail nearby, took pictures, talked about coming back in the fall. But every now and then, I'd catch Lauren looking at the tree line, like she was still thinking about it. That night, it came back right around 2 a.m., someone knocking at the front door. We didn't move, we just listened. And then, the whistling, starting far away, then getting closer, until it stopped right outside the bedroom window again. But this time, it didn't end there. We heard a voice. It was faint and soft. Help. Lauren grabbed my arm instantly. Don't go out there, she whispered. But it came again. Please help me. It sounded like someone was desperate. I sat there for a few moments, my heart pounding, trying to decide what to do. Everything in me said something was wrong, but what if it wasn't? What if someone actually needed help? I got up, slowly walked through the house, and unlocked the front door. The air outside was colder than it had been all day. I stepped onto the porch. Hello? Nothing. There was no movement or response. I stepped off the porch. Is anyone out here? Silence. Just the woods. No echo, no reply. After maybe a minute, I went back inside and locked the door. I got back in bed and just laid there, wondering what was going on. The next day, everything looked the same, but it didn't feel the same. The cabin wasn't comforting anymore. It felt like it was dangerous to be out here. We didn't talk about buying a place out there anymore. We just kept saying, one more night, and then we're gone. That night around 11 p.m., I realized I had left my phone charger in the car. I didn't want to go outside again, but I told myself it would take 10 seconds. Out and back. That's it. I stepped outside, walked down the driveway, grabbed it from the passenger seat, and as I closed the car door, I heard her voice. Breeze. Lauren, from the woods. Breeze was her nickname for me. Only she called me that. Breeze, come here, you have to see this. She sounded excited, happy. I hadn't even seen her come outside. Breeze, come check this out. It's incredible. I turned slowly toward the tree line. I couldn't see anything, but her voice sounded so clear and close, like she was just a few steps inside. Come on, you have to see this. Without even thinking, I started walking, one step, then another. Her voice kept pulling me forward. Breeze, just a little further. And then, for no reason I can explain, just a feeling, I stopped and turned around, just for a second, looked back at the cabin, and there was Lauren, passing by a window. I glanced back at the woods, and then took off running back into the cabin. But by the time I got there, Lauren was gone. I looked over and saw the back door open. I walked back out onto the deck, and that's when I saw her, walking slowly towards the tree line behind the cabin. Not reacting, not looking around, just walking forward, like she was being pulled. Lauren, I screamed. She didn't stop. Lauren, stop! I ran out, my shoes slipping on the gravel as I rushed towards her. And the second she turned and saw me, her expression changed completely. Confused, then fear. Then we both sprinted back towards the house. She ran past me, up the steps, inside. I followed right behind her and slammed the door, locking it. We both just stood there, breathing hard. What were you doing? I asked. Her face looked pale. I thought you were outside, she said. What? I heard you calling me, Lauren said, her voice shaking. From the woods. You kept saying my name, telling me to come out there. I told her the exact same thing had happened to me, out front. Whatever was out there was trying to get us, and it knew exactly how. We didn't sleep much that night. Every creak, every shift in the house felt like something getting closer. But for some reason, 2 a.m. came and went, and there were no knocking sounds. At sunrise, we packed everything and left. We didn't clean, we didn't check anything, we just left. About 20 minutes down the road, we stopped at a small gas station. There was an older man behind the counter, and we just sort of told him everything. The cabin, the knocking, the whistling, the voice. He didn't interrupt once, and didn't look surprised either. When I finished, he just nodded slowly and then said, "You done broke just about every rule we have around here." I asked him what he meant, and he looked at me and said, "You don't answer the door at night. You don't follow voices in the woods." Then he paused and added, "You'd never be the same if you made it back out of those woods after following that voice. If you ever made it back at all." Our next story. We spent the entire week at my uncle's beach house on the coast of North Carolina. It was one of those quiet, peaceful trips. Salt air, long days in the sun, late dinners, everyone completely relaxed. But by the time we packed up to head home, we were exhausted. We left later than planned, and by the time we got inland and into the mountains, it was already dark. It was me, my mom, my dad, and my older brother, Tyler. I was in the back seat, half awake. We were driving through the Appalachian Stretch in western North Carolina. On the interstate, at some point, traffic slowed to a crawl. Roadwork, miles of it. There were cones everywhere, lanes merging. It was a mess. Eventually, my dad sighed and said he was getting off the interstate. GPS suggested a back road. It was supposedly faster. We took it. At first, everything seemed fine. It was a narrow two-lane road. After about 20 minutes, we lost service. We couldn't get a signal. We couldn't get the map to load. It was just a blank screen. "Typical," my dad said under his breath. The road got darker the further we went. There were no streetlights or houses, just trees. And then suddenly, lights. A small town appeared around a bend. Not big, just a handful of buildings, a few houses, maybe a shop or two, and a diner. And that was the name, just Diner. Orange neon glowing sign. It sat right off the road. It looked old, but not abandoned. My mom suggested we stop, stretch our legs, get something to eat, reset for a bit. My brother, who is basically a human garbage disposal, yelled out, "Yes!" I was hungry too, so I agreed. We pulled into the gravel lot. There were a few cars parked outside, and as we got out of the car, I remember feeling kind of strange. There was something bizarre about the town, although I couldn't put my finger on why. We got out, walked inside. The bell above the door chimed as it opened, and immediately every conversation inside stopped. It wasn't dramatic, no one turned fully towards us, but you could feel it, like the entire room noticed we were there. The diner looked normal enough, a few booths, long counter, people sitting, eating, but it felt staged, uncomfortable. A hostess stood at the front. She smiled the second she saw us. "Welcome back." We all kind of paused. "Welcome back?" my dad asked. He gave a polite smile. "I think you've got the wrong family. We've never been out here before." The hostess tilted her head slightly, still smiling. "Of course you have," she said. "Just hasn't been for a while." She looked straight at my mom. "Hi, Deborah." Then at my dad. "David." Then my brother. "Hi, Tyler." And finally, she looked right at me and said my name, not guessing or hesitant. Confidently, like she had known it for years. You were getting so big, Casey. Last time I saw you, you were up to here, she said as she pointed towards her hip. We all just stood there. My mom gave a small, uneasy laugh. How do you know our names? You must have us confused with another family. But the hostess just shook her head gently. Before we could say anything else, she grabbed menus and started leading us. And for some reason, we followed. We slid into a booth along the far wall. No one spoke for a second. I could feel it, that quiet, shared confusion, like we were all trying to make sense of what had happened. How do they know our names? Tyler whispered. They must have looked us up somehow, my dad said. How? My brother shot back. We don't even have service. That's when I noticed the wall. It was covered in framed photos. Families, smiling, sitting in that exact diner. Some looked old and some were more recent. Just normal pictures of people who had eaten there. Until my eyes landed on one photo in the center. My stomach dropped. It was a photograph of me and my brother, younger, maybe 8 or 9, sitting right where we were now at a table, smiling, like we'd just taken a picture before eating dinner. Mom, I said quietly. She looked up, following my gaze, and her face changed instantly. What is that? She whispered. My dad turned. My brother leaned forward. There was no explanation. We had never been there. We would have remembered. I stood up slowly and walked closer to the photo. It wasn't edited. It was us. Same faces, same features. Different time. Different memory that didn't exist. Where did you get this? My dad asked, his voice more aggressive now. The waitress, who I hadn't even seen approach, looked at the wall like nothing was wrong. We took it the last time you all were in, she said casually. My brother let out a short, uneasy laugh. We've never been here. She just smiled. Yes, you have. And that was it. No explanation. I leaned closer to my mom. I don't want to stay here. She nodded immediately. Yeah, she said, standing up. We're going to go. No one stopped us. No one questioned it. The hostess just stood there, smiling as we walked out. Come back again soon, she said. The bell chimed behind us as the door closed. And the second we stepped outside, it felt different. We all jumped in the car without saying much. My dad started the engine and pulled out of the lot. No one looked back. Finally, Tyler broke the silence. What just happened? He screamed out. We drove in silence for a while, all of us too stunned to speak. My dad just shaking his head. And then, a few miles down the road, service came back, just like that. Our phones buzzed, the maps loaded again. It was like nothing had happened. About 30 minutes later, we reached a larger town and pulled into a hotel. It was normal, bright lights, people coming and going, cars in the lot. It all felt real again. Inside, while my dad checked us in, my mom, who I could tell was disturbed, mentioned the diner, described the road, the turn, the little town. The man at the front desk had this blank stare and then shook his head. I've lived here my whole life, he said. There's nothing out that way. My brother insisted, there is a town, a diner. The hotel clerk cut him off gently. No, sir, just mountains out there, no businesses. Definitely no restaurant, it wouldn't survive out there anyway. That unsettled us more than anything. When we got home, we tried to find it. Searched maps, satellite images, old records, there was nothing. No town, no diner. Just miles of woods. We even went back through old family photos. There was no picture of us in that diner, in that town. Nothing explained what we saw on that wall. We even asked my uncle. We've been going out to his beach house since I was a baby, and he said the same thing as that man at the hotel. There's nothing out that way. It's been years now. We still talk about it sometimes. Except my brother Tyler, he won't talk about it. I think it bothered him a lot more than the rest of us. I, on the other hand, have become obsessed with finding out what happened to us that day. It wasn't a shared delusion. The memory is all clear in our minds. But no matter how much time passes, none of us can explain how a place we've never been had a picture of us already hanging on the wall.